Chapter 20. Galatter System. Approaching Galatter 8 Orbit. The greatest reward came from the greatest risks, Jason had said, and Lumia had agreed with him.
So long as you accurately assess the reward and the risks, she'd added.
And then she had volunteered to accompany him on this expedition to infiltrate the Confederation election ceremony. Setting it up had been easy enough. It had been Galactic Alliance intelligence that had discovered there would be representatives of the Hapes Consortium Heritage Council, the conspiracy that had collaborated with Corellia to kill Tenel Ka, at the meeting. And Admiral Neothel had been the first to propose that authenticated independence groups, even from worlds most devoted to the Galactic Alliance, might find admission. It hadn't been too much work for Jason to persuade Neothel that he be the Galactic Alliance agent assigned to attend the meeting. His status as the Jedi with the closest ties to the military ensured him that right. Manipulating things so that Lumia could accompany him had been trickier. But she admitted to maintaining a number of fully detailed false identities that would withstand scrutiny from either side's intelligence division. And one of them, that of smuggler Sylphinia L., had a registered world of birth that would fit the profile GA intelligence needed. So Jason had arranged for documents for himself and Sylphinia from the Ession government. And now, his features heavily disguised under dark spray-on skin color and a beard, he carried an identikard showing him to be a member of Ession's most violent revolutionary party. Working through Captain Levent and her mysterious contacts, he had been able to wrangle an admission to the ceremony, but not a vote. That was fine. He wasn't there to vote. He was there to note faces, identify traitors, and distract everyone present, perhaps by killing them all, when the battle began. And Lumia was beside him, acting as backup in case of trouble. Her scarred features concealed under her expertly applied makeup, she now had dark skin and hair like his. Jason guided the ugly disc-shaped shuttle of Corellian make into the approach vector the stern voice on the comm board had assigned to him. "Quite a force," he said. Through the viewport and on the main sensor display, he could see Bothan assault cruisers, Corellian cruisers and frigates, an Imperial-class star destroyer, numerous other capital ships, and shuttles. There was a lot of shuttle traffic to the station, which resembled a dome-shaped manual fruit juicer resting on a plate, but a kilometer across.
"And it's ready for action," Lumia said. "Can you feel it in the Force? The readiness of the crews and officers? They want blood. That suggests they'll be going after the closest of the likely targets."
"Coruscant herself. Though Kuat's not that much farther." The shuttle shook as if fired upon. "Hey." He'd had no advance warning through the Force of an imminent attack. "Tractor beam," he said.
"Their security people obviously like to be in complete control,"
Lumia answered. In minutes, the shuttle was drawn to an external docking station, and Lumia was proved correct. When the station side hatch opened, personnel in Corsec uniforms boarded, with their commander stating, "Give your vehicle access codes to Sergeant Meeser. He'll take your craft to the designated retrieval zone." Her voice low and amused, Lumia asked,
"Will he expect a tip?"
The officer blinked. "Regulations of the meeting prohibit any vehicle from remaining within 10 kilometers of the station," he answered. Then he realized he hadn't addressed her question. "No tip is necessary. He couldn't accept one if you offered it."
"Pity."
She swept out through the open hatch. Jason gave his code to the temporary pilot, then followed Lumia. He found her being greeted by a white-furred Bothan of decidedly friendlier disposition than the Corsac agents.
"Sylphinia L.,"
she said, as she allowed the Bothan to squeeze her hand.
"Ession Freedom Front. And my nephew, Najak L."
The Bothan blinked, clearly never having heard of either the Front or the L family.
"Delighted," he answered.
He reluctantly shook Jason's hand in turn.
"Brafe Tadalish, one of your hosts."
"When does the voting begin?" Jason asked. "We haven't received a schedule of events."
"Very funny."
The Bothan waved to the far door out of the antiseptically white and clean room they had entered.
"This was once a decontamination chamber. It is, sadly, almost immune to decoration. But beyond that door, you'll find far more congenial surroundings. Food, drink, good company. Like-minded company."
"I could use some of that," Jason said, and heard Lumia stifle a laugh. From this shallow depth within the atmosphere of Galater 8, the crews of the Alliance Force had a decent view of the distant space station and the stars beyond. The atmosphere made the stars twinkle just a little, and made their view slightly hazy. That was all.
"Tight beam transmission from Stealth 1,
Neophil's aide told her on the bridge of the Galactic Voyager.
"A Hutt light cruiser arriving. But that's the only capital ship in the last half hour. The rate of major arrivals has dropped nearly to zero."
Neophil, sitting in her multiply articulated swivel command chair, grimaced. The odds were now just the wrong side of even, which would be problematic in a straight-up fight. Fortunately, the Alliance had the advantage of surprise.
"Very well," she said,
her words merely acknowledging that she'd heard her aide's report.
"Any major players still missing?"
"No, ma'am."
Neophil raised her voice so that it could be heard across the entire bridge.
"Issue the order to the fleet. All ahead, slow. The outlying vessels are not to jump until they receive a direct command."
Jason and Lumia separated once inside, the better to acquire information across a broader area. The main chamber of the resort, the dome above recently cleaned to provide an unobstructed view of Galater 8, was laid out with long tables full of food and drink. Delegates wandered from one to the next, or from one small standing group to the next. There was no urgency or animosity to be seen among them. That was curious. As critical as the election of a Supreme War Commander should be, Jason had anticipated more anxiety and more notoriety among the attendees. So far, he hadn't recognized a single face. Jason accepted a drink from a server, a tall, fair-haired woman in a white gown that looked like it dated to the late Old Republic, but was probably just an in-vogue dress on some backwater world. "So, where's the coordinator?" he asked, making the question sound innocuous.
"I don't know, sir."
"Any idea when opening arguments are supposed to begin?" The server reached up to tug at her earlobe, just a nervous gesture, except Jason could feel the lie in the casual nature of her movement.
"I don't know that either. Perhaps they've broadcast the schedule to everyone's datapad?"
"What did you just do?" Jason asked. The woman's nervousness increased by a factor of 10 or more.
"I answered your quest—"
"No." He leaned in close, intimidating. "When you touched your ear, tell me, or I'll be forced to kill you." She looked right and left,
as if seeking an avenue of escape, or an observer. "Please," she said, "we're supposed to. If anyone asks questions..."
"You sent a signal?"
"Yes."
Jason wheeled and walked quickly back toward the door by which they'd entered the big chamber. Through the force, he reached out to Lumia. A warning.
"Gentle beings!"
The voice was so loud, broadcast from on high, that Jason was compelled to look. Toward the center of the great chamber, a hologram was forming. 6 meters high, it showed a male human in a white admiral's uniform, the cut and styling more suited to the Palpatine-era empire than to modern military forces. The man was trim, with high cheekbones and fair hair cut into a military style. A scar, livid even in the hologram, started on his upper left lip and crossed straight down to the lower lip. To Jason, he looked rather a lot like General Tycho Selchu, but lacked that officer's warmth.
"If you'll turn your attention to the sky," the admiral continued, "you'll witness the forces of the Galactic Alliance emerging from the planet's atmosphere. This will be visible as a series of bright flashes as they begin to hit our mine grid. Closer to us, I'd like to introduce you to a distinguished visitor."
A spotlight from high above blared right into Jason's eyes. He twisted away, knowing he was framed by its glow, and turned to glare at the hologram. The hologram continued,
"If our specialists are worth what we're paying them, you may raise a glass to Colonel Jason Solo, Galactic Alliance Guard. Some of you Corellians may have lost relatives and friends to this man's many recent activities."
Jason heard a murmur of anger from some in the crowd, but most reacted only with curiosity. A few moved away from him a few steps. Others sipped their drinks, unconcerned.
"We haven't been introduced," Jason said, projecting his voice.
The giant hologram nodded.
"General Ter Fenner, Supreme Commander of the Confederation Military, at your service."
"I thought
that today would be the day that office was elected."
Fenner shook his head as if saddened by Jason's credulity.
"A deception I thought would be useful in drawing your forces in. And your presence here is another benefit, an unexpected one. I know you're going to attempt to fight your way out, but I must ask, please don't kill the delegates. They're only actors."
Behind Jason came the sound of running feet. The security agents. They, he was sure, were real. Yes, he'd fight his way out, but he had something to do first. He gestured upward, toward Galater 8, and put his whole heart into two thoughts.
"It's a trap. Mines."
"It's a trap," Luke shouted into his comlink. "He's visualizing mines. I say again, mines."
"Acknowledged, Stealth One,"
came the voice of the Voyager's comm officer.
"Be advised. With that transmission, your position is compromised."
"No kidding. Stealth One out."
Luke switched his comm board over to squadron frequency.
"What now?"
Mara asked.
"We go in," Luke said.
He could hear the reluctance in his own voice. "And rescue Jason." Over the X-Wing's intercom, R2-D2, directly behind Luke, offered a melancholy trill. Every officer on the Galactic Voyager bridge waited for the order to come. The order to take a new heading, to circumnavigate the mind grid ahead of them. That's not what they got.
"Continue all ahead slow,"
Neophil ordered.
"All forward gun positions of all lead vessels open up in a sweep pattern directly forward. Second-tier capital ships and starfighters still in formation drop in behind the capital ships. The order is given for Anakin Solo and all outlying vessels to jump."
There was the briefest delay, and then the bridge crew turned to its new tasks. Galactic Voyager's commander, a Quarren named Squin, edged toward Neophil. His face tentacles were motionless with forced calm, but a question burned in his eyes. Neophil answered it. She had to speak more loudly as Voyager's weapons batteries began firing.
"If we hadn't gotten Solo's warning, Captain, what would have happened?"
"We would have advanced into the minefield."
"Until?"
"Until our forward ships began hitting the mines."
"And then?"
Understanding dawned in the Quarren's expression. "We would have set a new course, a lateral course, into more mines that have been maneuvered into place while we were waiting here." Neophil nodded.
"Mines we couldn't detect because of the thicker atmosphere around and below us. Mines that would continue to close on us. This way we are going to be hammered, but with the fewest number of hammers they currently have to swing against us."
"Understood." Captain Squin edged away again. "It's a trap," Leia said. Though Jason's force-based warning had not been intended for her, she could not have missed it. Not a panicky emotion from her own son. She leaned forward in the co-pilot's seat of the Falcon, but the only thing visible from the Galatter system was its yellow star straight ahead, distant and tiny.
"Han, did you hear me?"
"I did." Han's face was, for once, a mask of indecision.
"We have to go in and get him," she said.
The words hurt. Her anger at Jason's actions had not abated. She didn't trust him. But he was her son. She had to save him. "We're waiting for news about Alima," Han said. But there was pain in his voice, too. His protest sounded weak.
"Go, Han."
"Yeah." He hit the thrusters. The Falcon was already oriented straight toward Galatter 8. All they had to do was engage the hyperdrive. Lando rose from the navigator seat behind them. "Not that I'm part of this conversation, but I suspect I should operate one of the laser turrets, right?" Receiving no answer, he sighed and headed back to the turret access tubes, his cloak swirling behind him. The Ter-Fenner hologram had appeared so close to Alima that she was initially partly within his right leg. She edged away, disappearing into the crowd. Getting to this meeting had been easier for her than for any other infiltrator, she thought. After all, memories of her presence faded from the minds of those she encountered mere minutes after she departed. That, and her Jedi skills, made it child's play for her to bypass guards, eavesdrop on conversations, and never stain the memories of those whose resources they used. Unless she wanted them to remember, like Captain Levent. Now she hoped she would not be noticed as she made her way from the main hall. She didn't think she would be. Jason Solo was doing too good a job of attracting everyone's attention. He stood alone, a semicircle of security guards from several different forces blocking his path, and as she watched, they opened fire.
He leapt above the torrent of blaster shots, igniting his lightsaber as he rose, and came down behind his enemies. He spun, and two of them were suddenly headless. The rest fell back from him, firing as they turned. All Alima had to do was flee from this disaster, join the throngs of actors now moving in panicky retreat toward the shuttle access chambers. Then she felt her quarry. Leia was nearby, sending reassurance through the Force. To Jason. It had to be to Jason. That message certainly wasn't meant for her. But now she couldn't leave. She had to wait to see if Han was with Leia. Veering from her escape path, she made her way to a wall and merged with the shadows there. Zeost. Here, too, the Rodian jabbered at Dure aboard the Boneyard Rendezvous, this time clearly surprised.
Launch condition?
Dure brought up the sensor display. It showed an incoming spacecraft, its point of origin just a few hundred meters from where the Chief Avit had died.
He found a way off, he said. Smart kid. By the way, battle stations.
Everything was so alien. Through the vehicle's skin, Ben could see the ground and stars. He could even recognize some of the stars. And he could see a blocky, awkward-looking freighter change its orbit to approach the point toward which he was rising. His heart sank. He couldn't possibly win an engagement in a vehicle he barely knew how to fly, one with either no weapon systems or systems older than most modern planetary governments. "What are my weapons?" he asked. They appeared in his mind's eye. The arm at the vehicle's bottom could curl around into a landing base, or could stay extended and direct a laser attack. The arm atop the vehicle could line up on opponents and fire metal balls at them.
Cannon!
He all but spat the word out.
Physical cannon!
To his surprise, the vehicle responded with indignation to his words. His mental view zoomed in on the top-mounted weapon. He watched as a metal ball the size of his head rolled, propelled by magnetics, from a hopper into the base of the articulated arm. And then it was gone, emerging from the far end of the arm as a blur, with no sound of propellants accompanying the action. He peered more closely, and the sequence ran again, more slowly in his mind. The ball was there, and the same magnetism that had rolled it into place accelerated it along the arm, building up speed with every centimeter it traveled until it left the end of the weapon. Magnetic accelerator. Ben had heard of such a thing. A Verpine weapon, he thought, though that was a much smaller device. He'd never heard of one being built on a starfighter scale. And maybe his enemies hadn't either. His mental query told him he had less than a minute until he was close enough for those enemies to fire reliably upon him. A minute to practice.
Dodge, he said,
and the vehicle began a forward and back, left and right shimmy that nearly hurled Ben from his kneeling position. Kiara slid around on the floor, rough as it was, until she grabbed one of Shaker's legs to stabilize herself. It was frustrating not to have direct control of the vehicle, but also exhilarating just to issue orders and have them carried out.
"Ready top weapon," he said.
As if it were part of his body, he could feel a metal ball maneuvered into place at the base of the weapon. He could also sense a growing impatience within the vehicle. It occurred to him, whether the thought originated with him or his craft, that he didn't need to say things out loud. The freighter opened fire. Ben could see flashes of light around him. Then pain crackled across his shoulders as one of those shots connected with the vehicle's upper hull. The shock of it almost caused him to lose concentration. But anger was his friend,
Anger helped him keep his focus.
Fire top weapon.
The ball left the weapon, hurtling toward the freighter, and grazed its shields and hull, ricocheting harmlessly away. Too late, Ben realized that the ball was still an extension of the vehicle, an extension of himself. Even now, he could steer it a little, deflect its course. But he instinctively knew that turning it around and sending it back against the freighter would take too much of his energy. Ben's vehicle flashed past the freighter, and it turned to follow. It began turning well before they were past, in fact, keeping its bow and starboard side toward the Zeost vehicle. And Ben thought he saw something twisting and changing on the freighter's port side. He sensed his vehicle's desire to fire with its bottom weapon, to splash laser fire across the enemy. But Ben was focused more on what he'd seen. Turn around, he thought. Dive toward Zeost. Come around the other side of the freighter. His vehicle inverted with the speed and turning radius of a modern starfighter and angled down to come up on the freighter's port side. The enemy commander sensed his intent, tried to turn to keep his bow and starboard side facing him, but the Zeost craft's speed and maneuverability were too great. When the angle was right, he could see that a large panel on the port side was locked open, with another TIE fighter there, ready to launch. Anger roared up inside Ben. Anger remembered from being strafed. Anger at what the other TIE had done to Kiara and her life. And a second ball left his top weapon before he realized he had launched it. The freighter was rolling now, trying to bring its bottom hull into line to take or deflect the shot. But Ben applied himself through the force and saw the ball change its arc, rising to avoid the freighter's bottom, all but ignoring the shields, hurtling straight into the open hold, angling toward the stern. The ball emerged through the starboard side, carrying with it a debris cloud that had once been atmosphere and thruster components. The freighter's course and speed were unchecked. In punching through it, the ball had imparted little of its own kinetic energy to the target and seemed at first to have done no damage of consequence. But then the freighter rolled and began an immediate descent toward the atmosphere. Now, Ben let his craft open fire with the laser. Red beams jittered their way across the freighter's top hull, putting just enough energy through the shields to scorch the paint and sever a comm antenna. Ben shook his head, ordering his craft to cease fire, and oriented himself toward space. He relaxed, sitting instead of kneeling.
"What happened?"
Kiara asked.
"We won." Now all he had to do was find his way home. Use a spacecraft that had no navigational computer, might not have a hyperdrive, to reach the nearest civilized star system. Probably Almania again. Coruscant was too much to hope for. In his mind's eye, Coruscant grew large, and he could simultaneously see it as a distant gleam in the sea of stars.
"Can you take us there?"
He knew the vehicle could. "Before we grow old and die?" The vehicle didn't have a precise understanding of human time, but Ben could feel that the trip would take hours or days, not lifetimes. So he sent the command.
Galater System, Resort Satellite.
In the shadow where she was hiding, Alima saw two figures force their way in through the streams of actors trying to escape. They were Luke Skywalker and Mara Jade Skywalker, dressed in black jumpsuits with X-Wing pilots' accoutrements. And Alima nearly passed out from happiness. Luke was here, and would see Mara die. Leia was still coming. The universe was about to experience some much-needed balance. She stopped bouncing up and down long enough to find her comlink. She spoke into it.
"Activate and execute approach 2.
on the Duracrud, now floating with all the other arrival craft, steered to the holding area by resort security personnel, the nav computer would be loading and implementing a set of simple maneuvers. The Duracrud would move to a position directly above the resort's dome, a few kilometers away, and then begin accelerating.
"What are you doing, Dancer?"
The voice was cold, amused, familiar, and it froze Alima's guts. She tore her attention away from the fight, where Jason was coping with an ever-growing number of security agents, and looked to the right. The dark-skinned woman who had addressed her did not look familiar, except for her build and her green eyes.
"Lumia,"
she said,
"I asked you a question."
Alima gave her a one-shouldered shrug.
"We are here to kill Mara Jade Skywalker, who is here, and Han Solo, who is coming. And you?"
"I was about to dive in and help Jason."
"Do not do that."
Alima shook her head vehemently.
"If you rescue him, Luke and Mara will leave, and Leia and Han will not come. They must be here."
Lumia considered.
"Then let's jump in together. Our being here will keep the Skywalkers and Solos from leaving. Don't you think?"
"We do."
Lumia reached down and tore a long gap in her gown, freeing her legs to maneuver. She unwrapped the decorative scarf she wore as a belt, revealing the light whip beneath it, and rewrapped the scarf around her lower face and scalp, giving her the aspect of Lumia so familiar to Alima and others. Then she drew her light whip.
"Ready?"
Alima brought her lightsaber up.
"We are."
She was happier than she had been in a long, long time. Luke and Mara made their approach a merciful one. They landed in the midst of the thickest group of security officers. Luke's lightsaber flashed in a circle, severing 5 or 6 blaster barrels, and Mara gestured with the force to sweep aside 6 agents. Luke deflected a blaster shot from an opportunistic Corsac woman. "Let's go, Jason. Your ride's waiting." Jason struck, cutting a Bothan shooter in 2.
"I don't need your help."
Then he looked past Luke, and his expression hardened still more. "Oh, no." Luke glanced back that way. Han and Leia were entering the main hall at a dead run.
"And your other ride is here."
Then he heard Mara's warning hiss, more through the force than with his ears, and when he turned back again, Lumia stood before him. As Han and Leia approached, the nature of the battle before them changed in an instant. Abruptly, Luke was drawing and igniting his second lightsaber, the half-length Shoto, and using his primary lightsaber to deflect a weapon that looked oddly like Lumia's light whip. Han squinted. The wielder was Lumia, though her skin was dark. He raised his blaster and fired, but Lumia must have been aware of him. She simply twisted aside, and the bolt caromed off the floor, then passed through the chest of the 6-meter hologram of an admiral that dominated the center of the room. Mara, nearly surrounded by security agents, was batting their blaster fire back at them with her own lightsaber. Leia angled away from her, toward Luke, and then let out a surprised cry as a low table slid into her path, too suddenly for her to vault or sidestep. She tripped, but came up on her feet and lit her lightsaber. She stopped abruptly and stared to the left. Han followed her gaze, to see Alima Rar emerging from wall-side shadows, an odd smile on her lips, her lit lightsaber in her hand.
"Mine,"
Leia said, and leapt forward. Han ignored her.
He fired at the Twi'lek, but Alima casually caught the bolt with her lightsaber, then began spinning her blade in a defensive pattern as Leia reached her.
"I guess this settles the question of whether you're dead or not," Luke said.
He caught another crack of the light whip on his long blade, darted in close, slashed at Lumia with the Shoto. But with an exertion through the Force, she lifted a severed human head into the path of the blow, and Luke's attack sent the head spinning through the air. It landed on a table stacked with food.
"Of course," Lumia said. "I thought you knew. I am dead. I have been for decades."
"Then lie down and let us throw dirt on top of you."
With a similar telekinetic exertion, Luke whipped the tablecloth from beneath all the platters and hurled it at Lumia. It swept upon her from behind, but she cracked her whip backward, cutting the tablecloth in two, then continued the maneuver into a forward stroke. Luke deflected separate light-whip tendrils with his two blades.
"You really do hate me, don't you?" Lumia asked.
"You've given me plenty of reasons to, but no, I don't reciprocate your hate."
Luke leapt over another sweep of tendrils, coming down atop a chair and leaping free of it as Lumia's follow-up attack disintegrated it. He landed lightly, poised.
"I don't hate."
She lowered her whip.
"I'm sorry you think that of me. I haven't hated for a very long time. Yes, I've tried to kill you, but that was professional, not personal."
Luke held up his own weapon long enough to deflect a stray blaster bolt, a security agent attack that merely strayed too near him, then lowered the lightsaber, matching Lumia's action.
"You don't hate. Somehow I don't believe that."
"We belong to rival schools, Luke. That's all. Shall I prove it?"
"Sure."
Lumia deactivated her light whip and wrapped it around her waist. She gestured, palms up.
"Kill me now, if you want."
He took a step forward. "I don't want. But you're a never-ending threat to me and my family."
"Then take your shot. But first, for old time's sake, take my hand."
She extended her right hand, palm still upward, a gesture of peace. Luke gave her an exasperated look.
"I can't believe you'd stoop to such a childish tactic."
"No tactic, Luke. Listen to my voice. Listen to my feelings. I'm not offering you poisoned fingers or force lightning. Just a touch."
Her voice became more sad.
"If I'd wanted to hurt you tonight, I would have killed your nephew instead of letting him flee."
"Flee?"
Careful to keep Lumia in his peripheral vision, Luke scanned the chamber. Most of the actors had disappeared. Mara was dealing with an ever-decreasing number of security agents. Leia was backing Alima up across the main hall, with Han following, taking pot shots to provide support to his wife. The giant hologram was gone, and so was Jason.
"He left us."
"And I could have attacked you just now."
Luke returned his attention to Lumia. He felt no danger through the Force. None at all. From her there was only peaceful intent. He extinguished his lightsabers and hung them from his belt, then reached out with his left hand, his flesh hand.
His fingers grazed hers, and then her hand closed on his. And nothing happened.
Sweetheart?
Busy. Leia swung an almost ceaseless flurry of blows at Alima. But the Twi'lek Jedi continued backing away, fighting a defensive action, never trying to attack. It was unlike her.
Jason's run off.
Han's words created a tight knot in Leia's chest. She had risked her life, and Han his, to save their son, and Jason had just left them behind. But she couldn't dwell on that. Alima was still a dangerous foe. Leia had to win here.
Sweetheart?
Now what?
Incoming.
Leia backflipped away from her enemy, and in mid-rotation saw that the view of Galadar 8 was partially blocked. The same ship she'd seen Alima disappear in only days before was headed straight for them. As she landed, she saw that Alima had switched off her lightsaber and was donning a close-fitting, flexible helmet with a transparent faceplate. An emergency decompression helmet. Alima smiled at her. Luke felt the danger coming, but it was not coming from Lumia. He turned away and looked up just in time to see the YV-666 contact the top of the dome. The dome, ancient Transpera steel, did not shatter. It caved in, crumpling like a thin-walled metal can. The great mass of the ship hurtled to crash into the floor of the main hall, and a ripple like a tidal wave coursed through the floor. Luke leapt toward the exit. Mara was ahead of him. He saw the ripple effect from the impact bounce bodies up off the flooring, and the cargo ship, its speed hardly checked, continued plowing into the floor, punching a ragged hole through the axis of the space station. Beyond it, he thought he saw the relit tendrils of Lumia's whip lashing. Against what? An enemy? A wall? To provide her with an escape path? Suddenly, the whip was obscured by an expanding cloud of debris kicked up by the YV-666's impact. The station's atmosphere, with two huge holes to choose from, began fleeing into space, tugging at Luke as it went. Of those fleeing toward the exit, Leia was in the rear, Han just ahead of her. The ripple shock from the floor impact behind them took Han off his feet. Nimble and determined, he was up again before Leia even reached him. Up, but moving slowly. Increasingly, to Leia's eyes, Han's feet seemed not to want to find purchase as he ran. Nor did hers. It wasn't from the atmosphere escaping. The station's artificial gravity had to have experienced a complete failure. As her ears popped and pain grew in her head and eyes, Leia knew that there was no way they could reach the exit. No way they both could reach it. She reached out through the Force and shoved Han's back, propelling him forward through the door Luke and Mara had just reached. Leia took three more steps, but now, though her legs kept thrashing, she could make no headway at all. Her feet lifted clear of the floor. She had no forward momentum, no way to reach safety. She closed her eyes, determined to be peaceful in her last moments. Something wrapped around her ankle. She looked down. Attached to her leg was a line with a tiny hook and grapnel. Luke's piece of stupid, preposterous farm boy equipment, which he'd carried off and on since before she'd met him. He was at the far end of the line, braced against the door, hauling with all his strength. And as Leia watched, Han joined him. In moments, they had dragged her through the door and into the shuttle access bay, where they'd arrived minutes before. Han sealed the door. Dimly, in the reduced atmospheric pressure, she could hear a warning siren wailing. Leia lay on the floor, panting.
Thanks, she said,
What's family for? Luke asked. Hey, can Mara and I get a lift around to the other side of this station? Our stealth X's are over there. Gilladder System. In the shuttle he'd seized, Jason hurtled toward the Anakin Solo, broadcasting his identity as he went, demanding updates on the battle. He could see how it was progressing. The Confederation ships had been ready for the Alliance task force, but they hadn't been ready for the Alliance vessels to muscle their way through the mine grid, throwing off time estimates and ruining carefully planned flanking maneuvers. What had resulted was a slugging match, and to his eyes, things were even. He needed more than his eyes. Even when he got data from the Anakin Solo, it was only as good as the ship's instruments could provide, as good as harried, overburdened officers could analyze. He saw a Bothan assault cruiser lose power to its portside batteries. Instantaneous response on the part of the Alliance starfighter squadrons could have exploited the situation, which could have resulted in the cruiser's destruction. It didn't happen. He saw starfighter squadrons circling, looking for an enemy, wasting precious minutes until the Galactic Voyager could direct them to a worthwhile target. He saw an Alliance frigate yield the field because its commander obviously felt the vessel was crippled, unaware that its Corellian corvette counterpart was even more badly damaged. He cursed and pounded on the arms of his pilot's seat. Finally, he found an opportunity to board Anakin Solo. Not long after, Lumia reached him on his private comlink channel, reporting that she, too, had seized a vehicle. Someone's private transport, little more than an airspeeder fitted with improved engines and an atmospheric containment hull, and needed landing authorization for the Anakin Solo. Grudgingly, for he knew she would talk to him, and he didn't wish to talk to anyone, he provided her the code she needed. In the final analysis, the Battle of Gilladder 8 was a draw, with both sides retiring the field after suffering moderate losses. The Confederation trumpeted it as a clear victory for Ter Fenner, its cool-headed new Supreme Commander. The Alliance noted the fact that, even with superior odds and the advantage of a treacherous ambush, the Confederation had accomplished nothing. En route to Coruscant, Galactic Voyager. Luke lay on the small sofa in the cramped quarters he and Mara had been assigned, looking at the ceiling. It was a neutral light blue, featureless but for glow-rod banks around the edges, and the peaceful color helped soothe his thoughts. They needed soothing.
"You're very quiet," Mara said.
She occupied the chamber's one chair. "Still nothing new about Ben." Luke offered a slight frown. "And Jason's actions worry me."
"Running out on Han and Leia, you mean?"
He nodded.
"They should. I think he's getting even worse."
Mara returned her attention to her datapad. Ben's continued absence and Jason's actions did weigh heavily on Luke. But lying to Mara added to the burden he felt, and he hoped she would not detect those lies through their force bond. Luke didn't consider Jason's actions to represent cowardice, but Jason clearly considered the danger his parents experienced to be of less importance than his need to get to the major scene of the GA Confederation battle. And that was a cold-hearted choice for Jason to have made. But it was not what weighed on Luke's mind right now. Luke also had to ponder the meaning of Lumia's words to him, the gentleness with which she'd reached out to him. She hadn't been hostile or vengeful. His instincts about people, his skill with sifting truth from lies through use of the Force, told him so. Then he felt something new. He sat up, and Mara gave him a close look.
"What?"
He smiled for the first time since they'd left the Gilladder system. "I can feel Ben," he said. Anakin Solo. Jason sat in his private office. The glow rods were dimmed, and the only illumination came from the corkscrewing streaks of hyperspace light outside his viewport. Whisper quiet, the hidden panel in the corner of his office retracted and opened. Lumia entered, her face devoid of makeup, but wrapped against prying eyes.
"I can feel your anger all the way to my quarters," she said.
"Are you admonishing or approving?"
"I approve of the anger, of course. It strengthens you, and you need strength. But if I can feel it..."
"There are no other Jedi aboard Anakin Solo."
"Prove it. And while you're at it, prove that there are no nascent Jedi, no Force-sensitives of any sort."
Jason sighed. He did not relinquish his anger, but he did concentrate on diminishing his own presence in the Force.
"Good."
Lumia approached and seated herself opposite him.
"Jason, this was not a disaster."
"I was made to look like an idiot. I planned the mission. I bought into the trap."
"As did everyone, including Admiral Neothel, the mission commander. When the full report of the battle reaches the Holonews, it will be cast as a dramatic Galactic Alliance success. The forces of good beating back a treacherous ambush, all with negligible losses, and you will probably find your popularity has grown. As for blame behind the closed doors of government, your information was independently verified, wasn't it?"
"Yes." "All right, then. I was made to feel like an idiot."
"Ah. There, I cannot reassure you."
He shot her a glare, but said nothing.
"Would you like to avoid this in the future? To be matchless, undefeatable in strategic engagements?"
"No one is undefeatable."
"Perhaps not. But the commander who knows exactly where all the battlefield's forces are, who does not need to depend solely on limited sensors and fallible analysts, will be defeated much less often."
"You're talking about battle meditation. You've mentioned it before."
"No. Battle meditation is something many very accomplished Force users, Jedi and Sith, can do. Consider battle meditation to be the learner. The technique I'm talking about is the master. It is the capacity to sense, to coordinate, just by the power of the mind and the will. This is the ability that comes with the assumption of the title of Master of the Sith."
He continued to stare at her. "You aren't the master, so you can't teach it to me."
"I'm not, but I can. A blind woman who was once sighted can still experience colors in her memory. I learned everything there was to learn about this power. I can just never wield it."
Lumia stared down at her limbs. Her expression did not suggest that she felt betrayed by them, by their robotic nature, only that they were a bit disappointing. Jason considered it.
"Am I ready?"
"In all other ways, yes. But you have to make the sacrifice of love. And then you must take your Sith name to reforge yourself.
Who must I sacrifice? The question put a chill through him. If she were to say, the one you love most, he would be unable to do it. He would never sacrifice Alana. He would never sacrifice Tenel Ka.
One you love. One who will leave a void in your heart.
Anyone?
Anyone.
Jason stared off into the distance. Then it will be my father. Or mother. Or both.
Or perhaps not.
Jason stared at her, curious. Do you have a sudden affection for them I should know about? Lumia laughed.
No. I have forgiven Leia for what she has done to me. And Han was never that much of a nuisance. But it may be that you can't sacrifice your parents.
Why?
You must sacrifice one you love. Are you certain you still love them? Search your feelings.
Jason thought, and then reluctantly abandoned thinking to open himself to his emotions. He let images of Han and Leia float in his mind's eye. He saw them as they had been when he was a toddler, as a teenager, as a man. He saw them in the ever-changing light of his own experiences, as he came to realize that they could not be ordinary parents, as he discovered that they were willing to abandon him and his siblings to surrogate parents for weeks or months at a time, as he learned that they had to. He felt again the wash of pain that all those separations had caused, that all those reunions had never healed. All he could feel was pain and anger. Pain they had caused, anger he bore against them. But had the anger replaced the love? Or did anger simply mask it? As hard as he sought an answer, he could not find one. Lumia whispered in his ear.
You don't know, because you have trained yourself to feel too little, to analyze too much. That is not the Sith way. You must do both.
Jason shook his head. Emotion weakens you.
Yet anger, an emotion, gives you strength. Emotion doesn't weaken you, Jason. It scares you. You specifically.
He stared at her, suddenly furious. Nothing scares me. He could not see her face beneath her scarf. But he knew that she was smiling.
Liar,
she said. Before he could formulate an answer, she rose and returned to the secret passage.
I was wrong,
she said.
You're not quite ready. You don't know yourself as well as you must. Find yourself, Jason. Then make your sacrifice and take your Sith name. I'll be waiting.
She departed, and the door slid closed behind her. Jason stared after her, feeling ill. Ill that he had a weakness, that Lumia had detected it, that he was confused. And now he could not even begin the process of choosing his sacrifice until he knew where his heart lay,
until he knew whether he loved his parents. In one way, though, both answers to that question were similar. If he loved them, he should sacrifice one and kill the other to prevent retaliation. If he did not love them, he should consider eliminating them and the potential trouble they represented. Either way, both he and the galaxy would be better off without them. "Goodbye, Mom," he said. "Goodbye, Dad."